Oh, play that music. Hello, gorgeous humans.
Hello, another gorgeous week. Gods and goddesses.
Ari, you definitely look like a divine being tonight with your little halo. I love it.
Absolutely. And you look great as always with your rainbow wonderfulness.
So I've been growing out my hair again, I've been spiking it, so I look like a boy band reject. I need frosted tips that'll complete the look. How 2000s?
I love it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Restitching the Tapestry. We are on episode 125.
125.
Wow. 125. That's so exciting. It honestly feels like yesterday we were just doing episode 100, but that now is
a while ago now.
Yeah, that was a while ago. So tonight we have a lot of things that we're going to talk about, ranging from current events to the actual show topic, of course. But there's going to be a lot to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. So, Ari, what have you been doing and how have you been?
Oh my goodness. So, I worked out a budget plan, worked out such like a huge budget plan with my sister, and, I am like, I have a plan to like save to go to Paris now. So I have like a plan to work out like an actual, like, this is what we're going to do to get me to save to Paris. Also, I'm starting the beginning stages of getting together a loan to buy a house. I'm going to buy a house. So,
oh my God, that's huge.
We're working on the beginning stages of looking for a house for me, so I can move out of an apartment and have my own space. So, yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Well, if and when you need help moving, let me know. With how many times I've moved, I basically have a PhD in it. But that is so exciting. I'm so happy for you. In Paris as well. You're still planning on that in the fall, right?
I don't know if it's going to take me a little while to save for it, because the way the budget works, it's probably going to take me a little bit. It's probably going to take me probably a year or two. So it's going to take, okay. It's going to be a little bit longer than I thought. But I definitely am making a realistic plan so that I could go.
But at least it's in the books. That's what matters.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm actually putting money towards it.
I should do that with my dream trip that I want to do to Japan. I should budget for that at some point. Maybe this will embolden me to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that things have been going well for you lately.
Yeah.
For me, I've been doing pretty well. For those of you, we actually canceled our episode last week. We delayed it to today because Ari was busy. I was trying to not shit myself into infinity.
Oh my God. Tell the story.
So Thursday, we went shopping in the morning and Britt looked at me and he was like, let's splurge. Let's go to Bob Evans for breakfast. And the moment he mentioned Bob Evans, I was just like, my intestines were ready. They were ready. And I like, so I go there and I love me some Bob Evans.
Absolutely.
I ordered double blueberry stuffed pancakes.
Which sounds delicious.
And it was also, there was also like a blueberry drizzle on top. So like, it was like,
it was
supernova of blueberry.
It was a heavy boy.
So I get home and I immediately felt a turn in my stomach. Like, it's not like there was a twinge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I then proceeded to poop every hour on the hour for almost the rest of the day. So by the time Ari messaged me in the evening being like, oh, I'm so busy, or I can't remember what you said, but you were like, I'm pooped or something. And I was like, yeah, me too. But like, I didn't say that, but in my head I was just like, thank you.
This is where we are in our level of friendship with our viewers and ourselves, is that we get to that level of pee pee poo poo and we just have to share it with you. And we just needed you to know about that.
Like, Ari, I've had a rough poop day. I can't do anything. Sometimes that happens.
It's fine. I hope you survived.
I'm still here. So. So in other news, though, you'll probably note, everyone, that I'm at a slightly different angle today. I actually decided to buy a new desk for my office. And now I have like this cute corner L-shaped desk where I have like a lot more space. You can probably see part of it over here, but it gives me a lot more space to work in. Sometimes you have to rearrange a room a little bit. So like, as I, you know, assembled this,
your office is looking like fire right now. It's the green background with all of, like, you've got your like little figurines on there.
Little figures, my little books, my little Scentsy wax melt.
I like it. It's looking everything. Really good.
Thank you. But like, it was kind of like, it felt good to just kind of like refresh things just a little bit, you know, because heaven forbid, like something looks the same for a long time. Because for me, I normally am the type of person that will let things look the same way for a long time. But lately I've been like, oh, I own the space. Like maybe I should just do whatever I want with it. Right. So
absolutely.
So shall we proceed with the mission statement and then get on to current events?
Absolutely. I am so ready for this. We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Absolutely. So, okay, a lot's been going on. Current event snapshot. We've been experiencing some losses when it comes to celebrities. Ari, do you want to talk about that?
So the big one that I was really affected by was Sinead O'Connor dying just the other day. Was it yesterday or the day before?
I think it was yesterday.
It's really relevant to our topic, which is being woke, just because honestly, like Sinead O'Connor is somebody who was all about like social justice and made it kind of like a personal mission. But it's really kind of relevant to me because as somebody who is a person who has struggled with mental health issues, seeing somebody who has bipolar disorder she had bipolar disorder, I believe.
Fairly sure it was, but don't quote me on that. I may have to research that afterward.
But she struggled with her mental health and she struggled with, with suicidal ideation and struggled with that extensively with attempts at suicide. I don't know if that's the what caused her death, but the fact that she died at 56, is very suspect to me. And so
just lost her son. I'm fairly sure she lost her son to suicide about a year ago.
So it's just... I'm not sure if that's what the cause of death was, but the fact that she died at 56, which is fairly, that's middle-aged. It's not exactly. So it's, to me, it's like that seems to be like something that, that seems fairly early. And so, I'm not exactly sure if that's what the cause of death was, but, knowing that she has a lot of mental health struggles, it just seems like, it was very difficult to talk about that sort of thing. So it's just, it makes me very sad to know that she's gone so soon and that she spent a life struggling with all sorts of things. And it makes me sad to know that she spent her the last few years of her life struggling with those mental health issues.
Like I was telling you in the back room before we started, like her passing really reminds me of when we lost Chester Bennington a few years ago, the lead singer of Linkin Park, who was a significant component of my survival for many, many years. And to have someone who has a history of struggling with mental health, who is an advocate for it and is pretty transparent about it, like, take their lives, like, that's a shock to the system. Like, that's mm-hmm. really, it's a reminder that when it comes to mental health, we kind of have to maintain the sense of vigilance, right? Because if we don't, like, what could happen?
Yeah.
Right. So, another loss that we experienced recently, the legendary singer Tony Bennett, who is known for his jazz and traditional pop music, has passed away at the age of
96.
I'm
less sad about that because he lived a very long and happy life.
And so, right. And I'm okay. So, you know, I'm a Lady Gaga fan, and I know that Tony Bennett and Gaga are really close. I was sad because of how it would impact her, mostly because of like that mentorship, you know? So I was just like, oh, I hope she's okay right now with like dealing with that loss. Cause they've done two albums together. They've done a lot together.
But he lived a long and happy life. He had lots of memories. You know, when you live to 96, it's like, how sad can you be about something like that? You know, like when it's your time, you know what I mean?
And as sad as it is that both musicians are gone, like they do leave behind a legacy. Like their music will always be with us, right? Mm-hmm. And I am grateful of that. But again, like, we have to measure each situation for what it is, right? Unfortunately. Yeah. So a lot of other, just so many things this week. What has been going on with this week? Oh my goodness. You should do like a reading on your tarot channel about like the state of the universe this week, because I feel like it would kind of reveal some interesting.
I don't know. I feel like really positive energy, like that there's change shaking in the wind.
Personally. Oh yeah. Well, that's good though. I mean, everything happening, I mean, doesn't have to reflect something bad necessarily. So like on the news recently, Mitch McConnell had a sort of, I don't know how to describe it really, like a moment of dissociation, cognitive lapse on television where like he was in the middle of like a press briefing and then went silent for like 30 seconds, 30 awkward seconds already.
Wait. Really?
Yes. So he was taken away from like, well, it took them forever to like be like, hey, y'all right? Like they just let him stand there for 30 seconds, just staring blankly. And I was just like, somebody should have been in there like checking as quickly as possible. But he's supposedly fine. He did.
So they say that Biden is not fit for presidents, but they talk bad about, but Mitch McConnell is fit to serve. What was that?
I couldn't have said it better myself. So he did suffer a concussion some months ago, I think, from a fall. So it could have something to do with that, but like they really haven't, to my knowledge, revealed anything about
I shouldn't be so crass about, but it's Mitch McConnell. How sad can I be about Mitch McConnell?
Considering he's been kind of responsible for a lot of the things that have been happening that literally impact many groups of people, like marginalized groups of people, like that, you know, like regardless, like I don't wish ill on anyone. I hope that he's okay, but like, maybe it's time to reevaluate.
Karma is a bitch. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. The more people put hate in the world, it comes back.
Just saying. Karma is a bitch. And people talk you know what people are putting out in the universe, that Biden is old and old. You know what? The Republicans are going to see that their leaders are just as old and fragile and right. unable to be serving.
It's baffling to me. Like the whole ageist notion of that they keep throwing around, like it, like,
do you remember Strom Thurmond? Do you remember Strom Thurmond? Mm-hmm. He literally served for almost, what was it, 70 years? Mm-hmm. 70 years?
That is such a long time.
I mean,
but then again, like, we think, like, now we understand why, like, there, like, policy just doesn't change, right? Because they're, like, people aren't allowed to enter the process because there are people occupying it who've occupied it for decades and decades and decades, right? Like, having new thought is so important.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Gen X is barely getting their foot in the door. You barely, mm-hmm. I mean, you have maybe a couple millennials in the door. Barely. I mean, you can't get the new generations just not even able to worm their way into these positions of power because the old generation just isn't allowing for it.
Yeah. So another interesting turn of events recently, there is an investigatory committee in Congress investigating the existence of aliens. And that's been kind of gaining steam they
absolutely don't care.
Oh, that's what's funny about it. Nobody does care.
But didn't we have this during the Trump presidency? Wasn't there like a whole panel that like, didn't we already go through this song and dance during the Trump presidency where they released a bunch of information about aliens existing? This to me, like, who cares? Like, show us a body, show us an aircraft, mm-hmm. show us something that gives us viable evidence, or show us the goods.
Somebody in power did confirm the existence of aliens, but like, how, like you were saying, the evidence, like, hello, like, be transparent if it's really a thing. And the thing is, they're probably not, because they think it'll cause like mass mayhem. But the truth is, many people are barely just living. Like, people,
we don't care.
Like
what about, we don't
what about
know.
Their rent? What about, you know, like
inflation,
right?
Gas prices.
So it's like, while they're taking all of this time to do this, they could be actually making
a
difference.
It's like, what is this a distraction from, honestly?
That is a good question, because that's always what it is, right?
Climate
always
change. You know what it is? I think it's a distraction from, honestly, and it's probably what our next point is about climate change. That because I heard that a lot of oil corporations this summer have like walked back on their improvements to their promises on climate change progress, like what they're supposed to be doing to alleviate climate change stuff. And I think that this is a distraction from what they're supposed to be doing. And so like, it's sort of like that they're big polluters and that they're walking back from what they're supposed to be doing, or there's some kind of like, there's some kind of like backdoor dealings that there is happening right now. And so they're using this as like a distraction from whatever it is that they're doing right now.
Right. See, I guess I saw on the news today that the offshore temperature near like the southwest coast of Florida and like a reasonable depth of water was like 100 degrees. 100 degrees.
Yeah.
And they're projecting that the Atlantic hurricane season is going to be much more severe because of the drastic spike in temperature that we've seen this year. And I just, when is it going to be enough for people? A lot of people do care, but when is it going to be enough for
people in power to care?
Like the yeah, exactly.
They're just going to like run us into the ground and just like go into their bunkers and just like, but even in the bunkers, like, they're still destroying the planet. Do they realize that?
Right. So I don't know. Like, I really I personally feel that there it's going to reach a turning point where younger generations are going to have more power eventually, and they are going to be like, we're done. We're done. We're going to make a change. It's going to happen. And if you're not going to follow suit, then you have fallen by the wayside, kind of a thing.
I meet people who just deny that these things are even happening. Like, mm-hmm. I was at the beach the other day and I met people who are still climate change denying. They said that I met people who literally told me, like, and that's what I'm trying to, like, understand. You know what I'm seeing lately is I'm seeing Trump supporter stuff up again. People are mm-hmm. waving Trump's flags and stuff again. And it's making me really nervous. But like, there are people who honestly believe that the fires in Canada were started by like a bunch of people, that it was a conspiracy, that like mm-hmm. all of these fires started at the same time. And then all these people got arrested, and that it was like a flag operation to like distract us.
Interesting.
And I was like,
which is scary, a scary thought, right?
But I was like, you know, I understand, because when you get your media from from all of these, like, you know, when you're in a bubble and like all you see are these information sources that are telling you that these are facts, that are like mm-hmm. that this is your reality, it's I understand, but like it's crazy. Yeah. It's like it's that like you live in this like alternate reality in which all of these things are true. And so I don't know. And
but people create this reality where like everything is believed,
and who's to
right?
say, and who's to say that my reality is the truth? I don't know. That's the thing. It's so hard to discern what the truth is in this new age. Because we're getting told now that aliens are real. And for the longest time mm-hmm. we were told that aliens weren't real. So who knows what is real anymore? Who knows what real
I always is. Just try to default back to the science. Like, if there's multiple peer-reviewed, reputable people saying the same thing, then I always kind of defer to that as being like, okay, like if these people who've gone through this process to get where they are
For the longest time, we were told that if you believed in aliens, that was crackpot science. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, you know,
yeah.
I am kind of thrown off my game a little bit, because it is sort of like when you hear these like crackpot stuff, it's sort of like, well, maybe it is worth investigating, and maybe it is worth taking some kind of credence towards, and at least in, you know, seeing if it is true, and like doing a Snopes report about and seeing if it is viable information, because we live in an age where anything could possibly be true at this point. That's what's so scary about living in the future is that anything could possibly be true, even the most crackpot thing. And so it's so hard to discern what information is real and what information isn't. And that's scary living in the future.
I think the fact that we also live in this age where like there are certain groups of people who will twist things and warp things to the extent where like it just adds to that confusion, that becomes concerning too. And I'm transitioning into our conversation about being woke tonight too, because if you look at a lot of the rhetoric that we've seen on the political landscape, especially, there's this war that's being waged against wokeness. And I'm referencing largely Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis, who that's kind of like his campaign slogan, right? And I think that that's another example of like that twisting what something is to paint it in a different way for different groups of people. So they like get miscommunicated to about something. So with that thought being in mind, and we should check the chat really quick. RP, hello. Thank you. RP. Hope you're doing well. So I guess if we go back to the basics here and just define what woke is, to be very clear, like, what does that actually mean? So Merriam-Webster Dictionary, of course, has a pretty distinct definition of wokeness. And basically, it's considered a slang word, but it's become such, like, it's very much rooted in everyday lexical stuff.
Well, it has a history. It has a history with the Black community. It started with the Black community.
Oh, absolutely.
Basically, it started with the Black community as a way to stay woke to the man that
your surroundings too, like just like in general, your surroundings.
Well, just staying woke to white culture and like, you know, stay woke to what the man is doing and what the man is up to, and staying woke to speaking truth to power and all of that. And so it was a way of, you know, Black people used to their brothers and sisters, you know, speaking truth to power and using that. So it's very interesting, you know, when, how it's been co-opted into, you know, the white community and the white social justice movement.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention weaponized by, you know, movements against social progress, right?
Right.
So, like, to give everyone a brief historical breakdown of the word's origin, or, like, when it kind of became, like, very lexically prevalent, was in 2014, after the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. So, like you were saying, being woke was very, and is still very common within Black communities, because it became like that, a cautionary watchword.
Well, honestly, woke was even, I watched a video about this. Woke was popular in like during the civil rights movement and during like the 70s. Mm-hmm. They used woke as like speaking truth to power during the 60s and 70s. And it was sort of like a word that was passed around the Black community of watching and looking around to what the man was doing, you know, during the Black Panther Party and during like the civil rights movement. So it was passed around kind of like among the Black community during the 60s and 70s. But it wasn't used online until
mm-hmm.
the George and was it Michael Brown?
Ferguson, the murder in Ferguson. Yeah. I think it's important for people to know that history. And I'm glad that you brought up, like, also, like, its presence during, like, the civil rights movement as well. Because, like, for communities who don't use that word for what it actually originally represents, like, we're shielded by our privilege, right? So, like, we can't possibly understand, like, the gravity of it. And... Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have that conversation, considering there are so many groups of people who are trying to kind of like twist the meaning of that word. So there are many groups, of course, who view woke and who kind of misconstrue it, because they are very much viewing it as being like this, you know, brainwashing tactic to get people to be more socially progressive, right? Like I will hearken back to Governor DeSantis. He basically has said that woke things die in Florida because he doesn't believe in woke ideology, which could range from anything from, you know, like studies in BIPOC communities, like LGBTQ+ presence and existence, etc. Like any of that is considered woke.
It almost seems as though it, like, woke became a term for like becoming a Democrat, or like the social justice movement of the democratization of that. It was like woke and Democrat became intertwined together. And so like when it said like it was like when he became woke, it was sort of like, it became like this whitewashed term for becoming a Democrat. It was sort of mm-hmm. like, it was almost like an insult hurled for going over to the Democratic Party and becoming one of the Democrats, even though you don't necessarily have to be a Democrat to be a person who is of the social justice movement, or to have simple social awareness, or just to not be racist, or to not want cops to shoot Black people, simple things like not wanting police brutality, but it was like those things are considered woke, or not allowing for gay marriage or allowing for trans people to be able to exist in certain spaces. And it was sort of like those things became synonymous with becoming a Democrat and being woke. And it was sort of like, though, it was like having human kindness and human empathy towards other people to exist in certain spaces was this idea of becoming democratized and becoming woke.
And see, the thing is, like, it's baffling to us that people twist wokeness into this type of thing. But the truth is, part of the rhetoric has everything to do with fear-mongering, right? So, like, the reason why wokeness is villainized is because there are powerful voices, like DeSantis, for example, who basically suggest that wokeness in some way will harm, you know, the everyday, like, hometown, proud, small-town American.
Well, they consider, like, they consider people who are woke that they have this, like, I was talking to people who are Trump supporters, and they have this opinion that the Democrats or people who are leftists have this idea that they have like a holier than thou stance. That's why I have they have this idea that they're holier than thou, and that when they, and that all they care about is their leaders only care about money, and that they have this opinion that they're better than everybody else, that when they're a part of this group, that they have this like stance that they're better than you because they're part of this group, that they're fart sniffers, that they're pretentious. Mm-hmm. And so it's that when you're part of this, and that's why this woke is considered an insult, because that's why they say all lives matter, is because they treat everybody equally, and they care about every single person, not just Black lives. They care about every single person. And it's sort of like, they treat everybody equally. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's why they consider it like pretentious and like holier than thou, and like being woke is like considered like this disrespect to every single person in the world, and that they treat everybody equally, and like it's sort of like they think that Democrats or leftists or social justice warriors have it like twisted, that they take this like social movement and they have it like twisted around, that they put certain people above other people in their head. You know what I mean?
Well, that, and I think that this is an interesting trajectory here, because I also think that it has to do with the fact that they aren't the recipients of the atrocities that warrant the conversation about social justice and social awareness. I had a friend a few years ago, like, I think it was around 2020, we got in a huge fight, and they got mad at me for talking about LGBTQ+ issues. And they were basically, they basically said, well, these things don't happen to me, so I can't possibly understand, and just, you know, F me, like, blah, 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 F my experiences, etc. And
because, like, they couldn't understand?
Well, like, the way that it was painted, they basically suggested that they wanted the atrocities to happen to them so they would get the attention, if that makes sense. Which actually is something that I've heard frequently from privileged people who've not been directly impacted by things. And but I'm just like,
it's that holier than it's that they think that people who are marginalized have this like holier than thou attitude that like, because they're experiencing mm-hmm. like that, they have this like victimhood that they're like martyrs or something, or that they're like that because they have these things that they're that they think that they're like this privileged group or something. And it's the other way around, that they want to be treated, that they want to be able to exist, and that they mm-hmm. want to be given a fair shake and a fair chance. And so it's gotten twisted around that because they get these benefits, it's that it's trying to even the playing field. And I don't think that they, Republican or like people who are on the right, understand mm-hmm. what the Democrats or what the left is trying to do as far as this social justice movement or being woke means.
Right, exactly. Well, like at that time when I had that conversation, it just kind of blew me away, because like, for people to think that we're getting special treatment, or anybody in marginalized communities are getting special treatment for simply having their issues discussed, you know, like, that's not special treatment. It's just there's more social awareness right now with regard to the things that have happened to different groups of people, right? And part of that social awareness is working toward making things better and not having those things happen to those groups of people anymore. Giving those groups of people better access to things, you know, giving them, you know, a place at the table so they can add their thoughts to the conversation, right? So again, and like we've mentioned before on prior episodes, it comes back down to privilege too, right? Like that's a whole other conversation, and people, like some people get really, really, really mad when you bring up privilege because there's like this shame tied to it. And I think that that's a shame that people have to work through, right? Like, yes, like you're going to feel bad if your privilege is drawn or is you have it, the attention drawn to it, but it's what you do after the fact with it that really matters.
Well, and right? People don't understand about layers of privilege either, like that you mm-hmm. can have a certain level of privilege and also be disadvantaged at the same time. Like you can be a cis white heterosexual male, but also be poor, and that you absolutely. Can have that certain level of disadvantage, and you can be privileged in so many ways, but also experience a certain amount of disadvantage too. But they don't understand like that you can have one disadvantage in one way and be privileged in all other ways and still, you know what I mean? And like, they don't mm-hmm. understand about layers of privilege. And so, and they use that as an argument as like, mm-hmm. well, I don't understand why I am not getting ahead. I'm poor. Why does everybody think?
Or why are you getting this special treatment? Like I grew up in poverty. Like I've had that conversation with my family and I'm like, I get that we grew up in poverty, but we're also white, cis, and some of my family heterosexual. Like,
it's layers of privilege.
Yeah, those are different layers of privilege. Yeah, like we had things that we navigated and got through, and thankfully we did. But
you can't deny the layers of privilege that you had.
Yeah, because of that privilege, we can't ignore what other communities outside of those spheres of privilege experience, right?
Right.
So, ooh, I love it. Like I'm getting fired up. So, okay, so obviously we got to wokeness being villainized by people in power because it's been viewed as a threat to the status quo, right? Like there are like systems in place, like obviously there's systemic racism, etc., that are in place that, you know, are threatened by like social awareness and having these types of conversations. Now, like, I think it's interesting to mention, though, too, that I think when it comes to social awareness, each individual has their own journey when it comes to getting to that level of social awareness, right? I feel like social awareness is like this ongoing thing where, like, the more we grow, the more we're educated, the more we are.
I would like to still think aware. That I'm on, I think I'm on a journey of social justice, that I'm still on learning things all the time. And that, like, I still mentally combat my own racism, my own homophobia, internalized homophobia, my own internalized misogyny. I'm still fighting all of those things all the time because society has, you know, I'm raised in a society that has passed those things down to me. I was raised in a household that passed those things down to me. I mentally go through those things all the time. And that I'm constantly have this narrative that's in my head that I'm constantly fighting against, my preconceived notions about people, about society, about what I think certain things are. And I'm constantly fighting it. I think that I've gotten a lot better. And I think that my level of awareness about these things has gotten to a level of point where I am aware of the narratives. And so it's gotten so that I can overcome those things and so I can catch them earlier. But it definitely is something that I have I am no better than anyone else. It's just that, it's just having that level of self-awareness of this is something that I do. I don't want to do this anymore. I need to work on this. And so it's a matter of, you know, it's like being a good person. When you're a good person, you have to constantly do the things necessary in order to be a good person. It's small acts every day of getting into situations, interacting with people in a marginalized community and saying, hey, how am I going to, what are the contexts of this scenario, and making sure that every time I do certain interactions, knowing that I hold a system of privilege and in certain circumstances, and making sure that I, you know, am aware not to do certain things when I talk to people, when I walk in certain, like one thing I noticed, here's an example. So one thing that Black people do that I learned recently is that Black people will move out of your way, that they always constantly will defer to white people when you're just like walking in like grocery stores, hallways, whatever. They will move out of the way for white people. They're constantly like deferring or like subjugating themselves to constantly move out of the way for white people. And like I noticed that, like, that Black people will bow their heads, and this, women do this for men too. They'll bow their heads in a form of subjugation, and they will move out of the way, and they will say they're sorry, and they will do this as a way of, because this is society's narrative that they don't think that they are allowed to take up space.
Yeah.
And so using my privilege as a white person, I will make an effort to make sure that I do not, you know, that I am not taking up more space than I need to, and that I do not push people out of spaces that do not need to be pushed out of spaces, and that I am very cognizant of how much space I'm taking up and the amount of space that I'm taking up as a white person. And that, I tell people not to be sorry for taking up the space that they need to, because that's a societal generational trauma that they're doing. People who are older than me taking up space and moving seats on public places like buses and benches and things like that, so that I can sit there as a white person. And it's very noticeable when you start noticing it. It's very obvious that Black people move for white people more often than not. And I thought that this was something that was done with, that people, that, you know, Rosa Parks sat in the front of the bus, did not move for white people.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that is still part of this narrative, that Black people still will move for white people. And it's very, very obvious that they do this still, mm-hmm. very much to this day.
Well, it's because, like, I mean, these systems are so entrenched to the extent where, like, people are conditioned to have behavioral reactions, right? Mm-hmm. Because of that self-preservation. And it's kind of scary when you think about it, and it takes so much time to unlearn it. RP says those issues need to be talked about. Kaishana's here. Hi, Kaishana. How are you doing? No, it's interesting. So we all know that a couple of days ago, I did a video about the Jason Aldean music video and proceeded to get eviscerated by his, you know, fans who agree with him. But for those of you who do not know, like, he made this music video for a song. What is the title of the song?
Try that in our town or whatever.
Yeah. So, like, I made a video having a conversation about, like, the fact that, like, that small town American experience is not the same for everybody, right? Like, if you are in a marginalized community living in a small town, if you do not look like, act like, or believe in the same things as the people in that small town, then you're more than likely going to be, you know, pushed aside in some way. And the truth is, I think that looking back at my own journey with regard to, like, awareness like this, like, I feel like it was when I left the small town and went to college, that's when I started becoming more aware of, like you were saying, that, like, internalized, you know, homophobia, like, that internalized misogyny and racism that, you know, like, I spent so long, you know, being submerged in this small, like, echo chamber of rural America. And the thing is, I firmly believe that it's necessary to get outside those echo chambers in order to have those conversations, you know? Okay, Shauna says, we need to have you on soon. That would be nice. You also say, I often feel like these conversations need my voice added. Please feel free to comment. Like you are more than welcome to share your perspective, and we will share it here on the show as well. Okay. So again, like, I think there is that necessary step in people getting beyond those echo chambers in order to see the fact that the world is diverse and that there are many different groups of people in it with different experiences that may not be something that we could fathom, right? Because of that conditioned learning that we experience in said echo chamber. So I don't know if that made sense. So when, I guess for you, when did it, like, I guess, when did you begin demonstrating that self-awareness? Because you talked about, like, some of your journey, but, like, when was it specifically? Was it college as well?
Like I said, it's been a slow process, and it's still a navigating process. It's not something that I have completely, Kaishana has something to say. I think that
the woke word was derived from Black and brown people, and many misuse it without realizing where it came from. Yes. We actually talked about that a little bit earlier in the episode about the history of it. And it's true. And if we look in media today, especially on the political landscape, it's misused and even weaponized oftentimes, unfortunately. Thank you.
But it's been a navigating process. For me, I started, it definitely started with my journalism degree, when I was, starting in college. I worked on doing media literacy. It started working with stereotypes in mass media. And that's really when I started to really think about my inherent biases as far as like how I viewed people of color and thinking about my own biases. And it continued on through working at my job at a magazine subscription company where I worked with, Johnson Publishing. I worked for the Hearst Publications, but I would work for magazines like Ebony and Jet Magazine. And I really started to really think about my place in the world and these inherent biases. And because I was working for these magazine publications during the shooting of Trayvon Martin. And so thinking about like these biases and the beginning of police brutality, I really started to think about like all of these inherent biases towards Black people. And just especially living in a rural community such as Iowa, middle of nowhere, Iowa, you really start to think about and just the way that they treated Black people in middle of nowhere, Iowa. It was very interesting to see the dichotomy of what I was seeing through this magazine subscription and interacting with people who are of the Black community with this magazine subscription service and how they treated people who came. They would always say, because people came in from Chicago into the communities in where I lived in Iowa, and they would always say they had, there was a quaint saying, those people from Chicago, but they really meant Black people. And so it was sort of like a nicer way of saying, those Black people. But it was sort of like, it became a euphemism for the Black community. But nobody would hire them when they came in from Chicago, because they were Black and there were biases towards them in this Iowa community. They would get into these lower income housing areas in Iowa, and they wouldn't have anywhere to go because people were racist in Iowa and these small communities. And so I was seeing it that they would come in from Chicago because housing was cheap and the employment rate was low, because that's why I came into Iowa, is because unemployment rate during this time, during the 2010s, unemployment rate was 4% and housing was exceptionally cheap to live in Iowa. So coming in from Chicago, Chicago had such an incredible, the gun violence in Chicago was immense. And so coming to Iowa where, there's no violence, there's the housing is cheap and the unemployment is low. It seemed like a really good deal, but not being mistreated in the community seemed like such a bad deal. So it was sort of like that was my awareness that things were not great. And so I became more socially aware that things were not great in this country and not great in our world, and things needed to change because living in that small community, that rural community, that I realized just how much I hated it and just how much I realized that things like redlining were still kind of around, but they were invisible. Things like socioeconomic, things like that.
No, absolutely. That's interesting. Kaishana says, being woke actually means being knowledgeable in a topic you were engaged in. It could be off, but I learned it from the Black lady that says, I'm going to keep it brief. She does podcasts in a parking lot. Nice. She's on Facebook. I think I know who you're talking about, actually. It's interesting because, like, if you look up the word woke now, like, there are so many different situational definitions as well. And I think because it's become such a huge presence in like our day-to-day like lexical discourse, like it's used in so many different contexts. So I think if we remember like the roots of it, like Kaishana, what you mentioned and what we talked about earlier, like I think knowing what the word actually means and kind of wading through like the rhetoric that we see, especially from the right, people will come to realize that it's not a bad word at all. Like it's not, you know, it's not trying to, you know, promote some ideology. It's demonstrating knowledge in a topic and social awareness. That's what it is.
I don't like using it only just because it's been co-opted by performative white people. It's been co-opted by Republicans to use as an insult for white Democrats as a measure of for a movement that that white people you know, do things that they don't actually do, that white people use it as a way of doing performative things that they don't actually do. And that I feel like it lost whatever oomph it had originally. And I feel like it just doesn't, I feel like it doesn't, that the original meaning of the word has been lost. And that I feel like whatever we had originally with the word, I feel like it's become like a caricature of what it originally was meant to inspire and mean.
No, yeah, I agree completely. Arby says, have you ever heard of the podcast, The Fire Upstairs? I think I have. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Kaishana. It's definitely lost its meaning because, like, in that happens often, unfortunately, when it's kind of colonizing when you think about it, when like certain dominant groups kind of like take that type of term and just spread its meaning so far away from its original intent that it just loses its significance, right?
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of whenever white people learn a new AAVE word. They think it's like a novelty, and originally when they first use it, they think like, oh, I don't understand this word. I think it's stupid. But then they start adopting it, and then it becomes like almost like a caricature of what it's supposed to be. But then it gets put on like t-shirts and branding, and it becomes corporatized, and it becomes like this weird, almost like monstrous thing that it's not originally meant to be at all. And like it becomes this, like it becomes weaponized, and it becomes like, and so it strays so far from the original meaning of the word that it becomes almost a new word in its entirety. And so it just becomes whitewashed and gentrified, and it becomes almost, it gets abused by white people so bad.
It's so true. Yeah, like Kaishana says, many think that it's internet slang when it's not. Absolutely. So here is a situational question. We don't do a lot of situational questions. Here's a situational question. A person says, ugh, I hate how woke things are these days. I feel like I walk on eggshells and have to measure every word. I hear that so much. And of course, I hear that from mostly cis, white, heterosexual people, right? So how would you respond to that? Like, how does one respond to that? Because I'm envisioning people be like wanting to have like ideas of like, well, how do you like combat people who are so fiercely against simple human empathy and social awareness? Like, what do you do?
I think the reason why people are afraid of that is because they're not willing to do the work. And the thing about it is they want to say, the TLDR of that, the subtext of that is, I want to be hateful. I want to be say hateful things, and I want to be just a really shitty person, but I don't want to be held responsible for my actions.
Yeah. And if I can't be hateful with ease, it's an inconvenience.
Absolutely.
Like they illustrate it like it's some sort of like hindrance to their day-to-day life.
It's like when people want to say, you know what it is? It's when people want to say the R word.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's such a big thing. And so it's like, why do you want to say such a hateful word? Or when people want to say, when people want, in general, when people want to use slurs, it's like, why do you want to say such a hateful word? Like, what point is there to say that? Like, yeah. What satisfaction do you get from saying a hateful word? Like, do you just want a free pass to be a shitty person? And like, that's all there is. And like, I don't understand. Like, do you just want to be a jerk and like not have people call you out on it and be like, I don't understand. Like, I hear that all the time. Like, why do you want the green light to be a bad person? I don't understand.
Right. No, absolutely. Kaishana says a lot of what Black people have created has been misused by white people. And even in the disabled, autistic, and deaf community, there's racism. And you know, BASL or Black American Sign Language is looked down upon by white deaf people. Like, it's interesting, like, again, like, that we could bring that conversation back to intersectionality and the importance of understanding, like, the intersections between different multi-marginalized communities and how, like, even in other marginalized communities, there's still, like, marginalization happening. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that up. That's super important.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if we were to end on a question, like, I would like to end on, like, how can one demonstrate more social awareness? Because the truth is, there are a lot of privileged people out there who want to get to a certain point and they want to be socially aware, but they don't really know where to begin with the process.
I think the biggest thing that helps me become more socially aware is just listening to Black people, listening to people of marginalized communities, like listening to them when they say this is a problem, like just following people of, just knowing and following more people of marginalized communities and saying, hey, this is a problem. Because the fact is that when you know more people of marginalized communities and you listen to them and you defer to them, then you will become more socially aware and you will be less of a dick.
Right. Well, and the truth is, like, it also involves a lot of independent work on your own too. Like, because, like, there are so many situations where, like, you can't always expect the individual in the marginalized community to be the educator for you. Like, there may be instances where you may have to go out and do research and read about it. And like we were saying, do the work, right? And you may not know where to start, right?
Kaishana, I think that's actually like the best key point is, I think it's key to ask questions and listen.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly.
And not to become defensive or upset when you're called out on correct behavior. I think that's actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like how people respond is so important too. Because again, like if you're called out on something, your response can either be like, okay, thank you, I'll do better, or weaponize it in some way against the person drawing attention to that, right? Which obviously, if it's the latter thing, that's going to be very concerning. So.
Because sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm the cis dude here, cis white dude here. You go first.
No, you first.
No, I defer. I can't. Now I can't even remember what I was saying.
Honestly, it's just knowing, because you were the first gay friend I had, and like that actually helped me become more aware of the struggles of gay people. And I mean I had gay friends before, but like you were the first like gay friend that persisted, and like so it helped me become aware of, I mean, that honestly, like knowing about issues.
Well, and I mean, you being non-binary in the community and bisexual as well, like that, both of those helped me learn too, right? And I think people just are so afraid of learning, right? Like, and the thing is, I think it's also like people are afraid to do the work, like you mentioned earlier, but I think people are also afraid of being uncomfortable. Like, learning is not always a comfortable thing. And that's because when we learn, we undo those cycles, those processes, those echo chambers that we used to be submerged in, right? Kaishana says, I've removed myself from the autistic community because there's racism and not understanding when it comes to intersectionality of Black and Brown autistics.
And that's so important.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, you go ahead.
It's so important, that intersectionality. I think that's really important. So I'm sorry that you experienced that.
But I also, I commend you for knowing when to create a boundary for yourself, for your own well-being too. Like, that's super important, right? So this has been a great conversation. And again, like, yeah, these conversations are difficult to have, right? Because it does involve a lot of like learning and looking at things from different perspectives. But I think it's necessary, right? Because at the end of the day, we're doing it for, like, we do it for people, like, for the diverse humans in this world, because there are so many beyond our periphery that we don't understand their experiences, right? Or what they've had to face or their histories. And I think it's crucial that we do so. And for those of us who are privileged, that learning is ongoing and it requires a certain degree of vigilance, right? Any final words from you, Ari?
Again, just having that social awareness, having knowing more people of marginalized communities, it'll help you become less holier than thou.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course, thank you, Kaishana and Arpi, for participating in our conversation. Your perspectives have been wonderful and very valuable here. And for everyone else, stay tuned. We'll be back next week. And we hope that you have a good rest of your week. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.